The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us, streaming live from our studios in New York City. If you want to watch the show, go to progressiveradionetwork.com or garynoll.com. We're going to be visited in a moment with our guest to continue our important series, Conversations with Remarkable Minds. The issue, quantum activism. Applying the insights of quantum physics and spirituality into understanding the clash of paradigms and aligning our thoughts to constructive positive change. How about that? When was the last time you heard any of that discussed on radio, left or right? You haven't, you will. And just a little background. 7 years ago, I founded the Progressive Radio Network, and I did so because I felt that there was a need for those people like myself who felt very uncomfortable simply accepting that if something was on the right or the left, liberal or conservative, that in and of itself, you had to accept it if you wanted to support that or be supported by people holding those views. Rather, I found that there were bits and pieces of truth and relevance in all areas. For example, on a conservative side, I am opposed to the military-industrial complex, to our intelligence complex, and the giant bureaucracies that do nothing but plunder the public treasury, meaning our tax dollars, for what? To support rendition? Taking individuals who have not had the benefit of habeas corpus and constitutional guarantees and outsourcing them to our friends and allies in Egypt? Yemen? No, I do not support that. So therefore, I would not be a person that would align myself with their ideologies, but I could certainly support the idea that we need government that is effective and that supports our needs as individual citizens, without any discrimination to our class, our education, our race, our gender. That's not what we have. We have massive, monolithic bureaucracies built by both Democrats and Republican administrations, and always justified. We have massive pork. I remember the time, and I don't know how many of you's memories go back to there, where I was arguing against NAFTA and GATT and the World Trade Organization. And I would do program after program showing you that the politicians aligning themselves with President Clinton were doing so because he was guaranteeing them that he would support their pork projects. Hundreds of millions of dollars were given to politicians if they align with NAFTA. Go back now and look at the consequences of NAFTA. It was all wrong. What's remarkable is that the unions that I support align themselves with Hillary Clinton, who is the most anti-unionist person that, as a co-president, we've ever had, except for George Bush, and Ronald Reagan. They all had the same mindset. Tell the people what you want them to believe and what they think is right, and then do just the opposite. I can show you over 2 million outsourced jobs. I can show you 32 million Americans who lost their livelihoods in the last 35 years. Not a single article discussing what happened to these people, well, at the time they were reabsorbed into other industries. Today, we don't have a manufacturing segment of any consequence. China does. India does. Has our jobs. Why haven't we demanded the Democrats and Republicans stop outsourcing American jobs or lose your position in Congress? They seem to be able to do whatever they want to do because they have talking heads in the left and the right media to protect them. Instead of bringing the right progressives, real progressives, into office and stopping these wars like Ralph Nader or Cynthia McKinney or others, or constitutionalists or Peace Party or Greens, instead, the best the Democrats can do are the warmongers and the corporatists such as John Kerry and Al Gore, and still don't learn the lessons of their mistakes. So I won't align myself with ideology I think are extremely limited. And that's why I founded the Progressive Radio Network. Today, we are the number one listened to radio program in the Americas, North America, South America, Canada, and around the world for independent minds. Voice America gave us a letter saying that we had 10 million listeners just on their side. They're only one of our outlets every month. That's more than NPR and Pacifica combined. And yet not a single news story, not a single column. That's the revolution under the radar. So if you think that those people who once were ramrod, rigid, completely set in stone, liberal or conservative ideologues, and that there was no other belief, there was no other voice, you're wrong. We have voices. Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions. Just one of our articles on vaccines alone last year was read by, we estimate, 50 million people on 159,000 blogs. Not a mention anywhere, except where it counts. Independent, progressive, humanistic, and spiritually aware people. Just organizing everyone is the key. So I started a series called Conversations with Remarkable Minds. Minds you will not hear or see on television because, A, they're too deep. They can't make everything simple in 3 minutes. They don't like being interrupted every 60 seconds by Bill O'Reilly or screamed at or demeaned by, Sean Hannity or Laura Ingraham. They're not used to being tennis balls bounced back and forth. These people are extremely in-depth, and they like time to lay out their thoughts uninterrupted. That's who we bring on the show. You will not hear them elsewhere. You will find a home here on our archives. We have over 300 of these interviews. And more people are asking, especially the younger people, we want to hear more conversations with Remarkable Minds. Today, in 2 minutes, he's just walked into the studio. We've been filming upstairs for 3 films, no less. A new film we're doing on quantum evolution. You haven't heard it because it's never been done. This is the first film of its kind. Also, he has just been finished being filmed just a few moments ago on Poverty, Inc. and now Greed Street, our thematic program on what's wrong with Wall Street. He is Professor Amit Goswami, G-O-S-W-A-M-I. Many of you are familiar with him because you've seen him in movies like What the Bleep or Down the Rabbit Hole. He is a quantum physicist, a philosopher. He is Professor Emeritus of Nuclear Physics and Theoretical Nuclear Physics, University of Oregon's Institute for Theoretical Physics. And he has been a major voice for understanding paradigm shifts in the new biology, genetics and psychology, medicine and the healing arts. His book is Self-Aware Universe. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Gary. Nice to be here.
Last evening, I took a moment from writing commentaries. And by the way, we'll have a commentary today after our interview. I'm going to find out exactly how long, how much time we have for that commentary. It may run a little long on the Huffington Post being sold to AOL and how I've never considered it progressive. But what happens when you don't have a truly progressive environment, then if you want any voice or get your word out anywhere, you begin to make compromises. And then you become the progressive voice on an otherwise very right or conservative blog, and it all get mixed together. Well, why not just have a site where just progressives have a voice, where no one has to mistake that? Anyhow, that's a commentary that's going to come after our discussion.
That's a good one, Gary, because, the current tendency of media has been to take scientific materialism, which is the basis of how do we do science today, very seriously. This science says that there are no values that can be upheld. Matter, material interactions are everything, and material interactions cannot process values, obviously. So value-free science. Value-free science, value-free media. This is why you bring progressive values. They must be balanced by regressive values, conservative values, however they define it. This is a huge problem. So I completely agree with you that there should be just progressive. Science is not value-free. The new science is coming. New paradigm work has produced astounding results that has been verified in the laboratory. We can trust it. There is no reason to say that we always have to balance any view with the opposite view.
Great. In the very near future, I believe that there will be a need to show people who are not yet aware of how much they can, much is possible in the way of constructive self-sufficient change, to get out of the cities and out of the suburbs into a more rural environment, but how to take what we have learned and gained from being in these environments to a more rural environment, to smaller communities where like-minded people can share common themes of living, respect for life, respect for nature, only having in your life what you need for happiness, and understanding the difference between material happiness, which is the only value we have today, and quantum and spiritual and conscious happiness, because without consciousness, we do not have spiritual. And without spiritual, we do not have quantum attainment, meaning attaining a higher level of awareness that keeps us from being greedy, selfish, destructive, so that we can solve all problems.
Well, you put it so beautifully. What happens with materialism is that we become believers of it's all determined. Nothing new can ever happen. This nothing new can ever happen degrades creativity in such a way that changes, especially changes which bring in new values, archetypal values within us, values like love and beauty and justice, which we all covet, but materialism denigrates it. So indeed what needs to be done is that we have to recognize that a new paradigm is coming in science, and we have to recognize that this new paradigm gives us inroads in creativity like never before, and then build a world where creativity will be the going thing, not only in words, not only in our outer products that we share with people, but also with ourselves, our own being that we share with people too. And this is where your idea of community comes in and extremely important.
Right now we have, I was just speaking with Celia Farber, who's sitting in studio here. And Celia, as many of you know, has been a major voice in what I call the movement to find truth in flawed paradigms. And this is not regular journalism. This is spiritual journalism. Now, that's a different term. You've never heard the word spiritual journalism, I don't think, because I made it up recently.
I like it.
And spiritual journalism is where you take an absolute, set-in-stone belief system that cannot be challenged, such as HIV equals AIDS equals death, or that synthetic hormone replacement therapy is the only treatment to help a woman with hot flashes, or that a child has a movement issue in class, a non-attentive issue in class, a jitter, it is ADD and you must treat them, or that vaccines are safe and effective for every person. These set in stones. Or if you have a terrorist, you must have 1,000 times greater challenge against the terrorist with military might. The only answer to war is more war. The only answer to terror is more terror. These set in stone, and this is how we live. And then you go in and you deconstruct the myth and you find the truth within that. So Celia and many of us have found the truth within the paradigm of AIDS. And guess who has now come forward? The man who discovered it all. The man who got the Nobel Prize last year for discovering the HIV virus, Luc Montagnier, has now said twice, so HIV, you can prevent it from going in your body if you have antioxidants, clean food, and clean water. And if you do have HIV infection, you can get it out of the body, not with drugs, with antioxidants, good food, and water. The very thing that we were doing at the with 12 out of 12 people, completely ridding them of all AIDS-defining illnesses and documenting it, but the media, the paradigm, could not possibly accept it. The paradigm didn't show up at the press conference. Your father did. Nobody would show up at the press conference except the 100 people who had benefited, long-term survivors, their doctors, and a panel of scientists, and an observer. One of the observers was Senator David Patterson. If you look at the pictures, you'll see there's the former governor who was in senator, and he was there to listen in. But we had a whole panel of scientists saying, these people had full-blown AIDS. Today they have no AIDS at all, and here's why, and here are their doctors, and here's their medical records, and here's the patients. Not a single member of the media showed up. That's the power of the paradigm. In comes the person that challenges it. In comes Celia Farber. In comes others in their fields, Chris Hedges, for example, Danny Schachter, Helen Caldicott when it comes to nuclear. All right? And then you dig in and you see, gee whiz, can anyone see? There's a whole lot of wrong here. And you go to the New York Times, you go to the left and the right. The left is equally susceptible to believing vaccines are right. You won't hear any of these shows on the left talking about everything for the left is vaccines, yes, drugs, yes, AIDS, yes, but they'll go against fracking. Okay, why would you become progressive on one issue and stay ramrock rigid on all the others? That's the danger of being an your whole identity becomes from an ideology, and hence your whole beliefs come from an ideology, and there's no room to change. You can't wiggle. There's no wiggling in concrete. And that's these ideologists. So suddenly we have in America today probably about, well, Seymour Hersh is one, we have maybe, Jeremy Shahir is another, maybe we have about 1,000 really, really unique, and I call them spiritual journalists. They are not given the credit they deserve. They're almost always attacked. They're given no room at the table of credibility, except sometimes by their peers, as some have won Pulitzer Prizes. But their information never changes the paradigm. So no matter how many articles or documentaries or broadcasts or demonstrations, nothing changes.
You mean others don't follow it up?
No one follows it up, because no paradigm exists without a political base to fortify it, a judicial base to protect it, the professional base to define it, the talking heads that go forth to defend it, and a populist base that is attracted to or supportive of it. Now, that said, here's my question. How do we go from where we're at, disparate groups working together? That's why I founded the Progressive Radio Network, and every day the articles we have, hundreds from these individuals and stories, to where all Americans become aware there's another reality, not based upon the rigidity and conformity and the non-flexibility of a materialistic reality, but rather there are conscious realities, spiritual realities, and the real activism that allows real change and sustainable change to change, not the paradigm. Paradigms don't change, but to create a new paradigm based upon no poverty, no hunger, no war, no discrimination, no violence. We have all the pieces there, but we do not have the total cooperation yet. It is coming. Your thoughts, please. And then, Sue, I'd like for you to share your thoughts after that on the same issue.
So we start with some yeses. To have a world in which all those no's can exist, the first yes that you have to bring in is yes, consciousness. Yes, consciousness. Consciousness is basic. The materialist worldview says that every cause must be a material cause. Anything that matter cannot process has to be dealt with suspicion. Only way that could arise is through Darwinian evolution. When you were talking about the givens, the biggest given, biggest fraud today, I mean, that's a strong word to use. I know I get in trouble using the strong words. But Darwinism is an incomplete theory. And yet, you cannot even make the statement that media will ever pick up. You can make the statements on the internet, thank heavens, but not in mainstream media and be credible, especially if you are a biologist. I'm a quantum physicist, so I get away with it because nobody pays attention. No biologist pays attention to what quantum physics has to say about biological evolution. So how do we change all this? This is where the crucial point is. How do we make this yes? How do we say yes to consciousness, yes to meaning, yes to vital energies, which is vitality? But these are all non-material stuff. These are stuff that matter cannot process. These are stuff that biological evolution, a la Darwinism, cannot possibly explain ever. These are outside the jurisdiction of what materialist science has given us. So how do we make inroads? Well, first of all, we have to have the complete recognition that philosophically we have solved all the problems that existed against integrating spirituality and science, consciousness and science, matter and mind. There is no philosophical difficulty with dualism anymore. This big bugaboo that materialist scientists raise, how do matter and mind interact, is solved in quantum physics with the idea of signalless communication. We don't need an intermediary of a signal in order for two disparate objects to interact. Matter and mind are now conceived to be individual worlds in a ground of being that is consciousness. And then matter and mind interaction is mediated by consciousness itself through quantum non-locality. What happens when these ideas become prevalent? And they are becoming, by the way, the weight of the data is so good, Gary, today about non-locality, that there is increasing pressure that parapsychology be included in college curriculum on psychology in many reputed universities. So this is very good news. The other good news is that alternative medicine, starting with the 90s, some government money is coming into the research on alternative medicine. Very little, nominal, but it has raised the level of respectability quite a bit. So my suggestion is this. I completely agree that we have to develop this alternate world. And through the internet, make it very clear that people can have knowledge in this alternate world. They don't have to depend on mainstream media. Let the mainstream media do its thing with materialism or value-free science and create polarizations like Fox News and MSNBC or whatever have you. But let people find the truth on the internet through works like what you are doing. You know, I similarly have an activistic movement called Quantum Activism, where we try to give the people the idea that you can change your life and change the world using quantum principles in a serious way, like non-locality, creativity, a giving up of the simple hierarchical system with tangled hierarchical system. Look, we started these things in 20th century, you know. We had racism abolished practically. Well, not totally, but still. It is at least, racism is now a taboo. Feminism, we have that. We have, at least on paper, equality of men and women. These things suggest that hierarchies are destined to become the dinosaurs of ideas. They got to go away. And what has to replace them? If the underlying science is hierarchical, which materialist science is, it gives us a simple hierarchical system, we cannot possibly change our society to abolish hierarchies, to replace them with what quantum physics calls tangled hierarchy, where cause and effect are two-way, circular. So we really have to go from the get-go and recognize that alternative ways of expression, alternative science, has to happen for a while until the weight of evidence and especially weight of technology, applications, such as alternative medicine is an application of the new science. Transpersonal psychology is an application of the new science, integration of science and spirituality.
Quantum healing.
Quantum healing. That these are applications. I am suggesting spiritual economics that removes poverty, that gets rid of the polarization of rich and poor.
And spiritual journalism, which refuses to accept a piece of paper given by a manufacturer that the drug is a cure for cancer, the drug is a cure for heart disease, and suddenly you're promoting the economic single-minded interest, only the monetary reality of life, instead of looking for the truth. How do you know this drug does anything other than what you tell me? Let me research. If we research the truth of all medicines, 90% of all medicine would show it fails. Only emergency medicine works. We wouldn't have the chemotherapies, the heart medications, the statin drugs, the psychiatric medication, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. All those would be obsolete because the real journalists who are not aligned would not publish that and be a propagandist. Would the bankers be willing to... We need spiritual banking. We need a banker. We need spiritual investors. We don't have those now as a paradigm. We have them individually, but the paradigm is... And by the way, just one more thought, and I want you to answer this too. Last night, I took a little break, and I ran across the street because there's a movie theater across from our office here on Broadway, and I saw a movie, and it was called The Company Men with...
Tommy Lee Curtis.
No, Tommy Jones. I forgot his name. Huh? Tommy Lee Jones and Ben Affleck and Kevin Costner was almost non-recognizable. It was a very good film. But the whole premise of the film was a shipbuilding company was downsizing. And it was cutting out employees because it wanted to make itself more profitable to be merged, and only one character in the movie really was shown to be a human being, and that was the co-founder of the company, who himself, because he wanted to stop the firing of other employees, himself was fired by his best friend who started the company with. And you saw the struggles of how each person dealt with their firing. And what was in one committed suicide. Nobody could accept the fact that there was a reality other than material. It was, I'm going to lose my car, my house. But nobody stopped for a moment and said, but what have I not lost? I haven't lost my children or my love of my partner. Isn't that worth something? I'm still healthy. Isn't that worth something? I can still go out and go for a walk. Isn't that? No one valued life. The whole message of the movie was the only value is material possessions, because without it, you're a nobody. Like the guy said, I don't want anyone to know that I don't have a job because it'll affect how they perceive us. So he would go even though he couldn't afford to play golf until they found out he wasn't paying his bill. It was all about image. And it's a sad film. It's a depressing film. And in one scene of the film, they didn't have to fire 6,000 employees. But the owner of the company, this kind of ruthless guy, who is just like all the other people on Wall Street, said, but if it gives us another $2 more value in our stock, yeah, let's get rid of them. And Tommy Lee Jones says, hold on, why don't you stop this big office building you're going to buy? You don't need that. Why don't you stop with the private airplanes? We could save 100 employees if you didn't take these private jets. And all the other people looking like, what? These people are just... These are disposable. And the whole message was, at one time we had a manufacturing base in America where people could do an honest day's work and get an honest living from that, and they could build a middle class, and they had values, community values, family values, life values, they had joys, and we had a prosperous middle class. Today we've outsourced these jobs to make money, and as the guy said at the end of the film, hey, we just sold the company, $600 million is what I'm worth today. That was the message. And then you look at the people, the hedge fund people and the Wall Street people, how much they made, but how much someone had to lose. And today, oil's over $100. Why is oil over $100? Has it been stopped? Has there been any blockage of oil coming out of the ground or blockage of it getting here? No, not a single drop of oil has been interfered with. Speculators on Wall Street are manipulating the price of oil, and they don't care about which woman won't be able to heat their home because they won't be able to afford the fuel. That's that kind of lack of spiritual awareness, that single-mindedness, is a problem in the United States. I'd like for you to address that.
Well, fortunately, Gary, what happens in all of this is that there is an evolution of consciousness going on. this evolution of consciousness will take care of some of it. And what happens, if we look at history, is that paradigms produce anomalies, paradoxes. And these paradoxes of thinking translate into real paradoxes of living, real paradoxes of maintaining the kind of, sustain the kind of civilization that you are talking about. So I don't think, I'm basically an optimistic person, and you must be too, because optimism is our natural state. We become pessimistic because of some negative emotional brain circuits that are also built into us, and because we become conditioned in terms of the worldview, etc., that are being sold. But the reason for optimism is very, very clear. Ultimately, consciousness is the ground of being. There is a movement of consciousness that is going on. It is evolving. And this way of movement, the movements that you were suggesting and rightfully very excited about, because what are these movements suggesting? It's suggesting catastrophe, like we are seeing already. Recession after recession after recession, and in between, what we see is
bubbles,
and they float for a while, but they disappear, right?
Your thoughts. I believe that we have been lied to by all the media.
Absolutely.
My thought.
Politicians. Don't forget them.
Well, no, you can't even say lied to them. Politicians. That assumes there is a separation of reality. They are all liars. Now, I believe that from 1995 till today, we have never left a recession. I believe if you look at the economic reality, and I have a background in economics, people don't realize this, but before I got my degrees in nutrition, I had a background in economics, all right? That's why I know what I'm talking about on this. We have lived completely in a bubble. First, it was a dot-com bubble that emerged into the housing bubble. And over $13 trillion was made that was a bubble, which means it wasn't real. And from that bubble, people then, the banking community with the Glass-Steagall Act rescinded, then saw they could buy companies. And the buying companies and loading them up with debt, thousands and thousands of companies, Linen and Things, Circuit City, Macy's by Federated Stores, all these thousands of one-time profitable, well-run companies that had, you could work there your whole life, you made a living wage, not slave labor, you had health benefits, they were not anti-union in most cases, the union represented collective bargaining, which allowed you an opportunity to live. Once those mergers came, those contracts were null and void. And then in came the hedge funds, the great capitalist vultures. They could see, you've run a very profitable company. We're going to go to our buddy over here at Goldman Sachs and say, that company is worth $100 million, give me $300 million. We're going to take $200 million as our profit. You're going to load that company up with $300 million worth of debt. Now you are going to go in and you're going to downsize all those employees. If they've been there 10, 20, 30 years, the longer they've been there, the quicker you get rid of them, because we're getting rid of seniority and all their benefits and how much we're paying them. Cut off those divisions. Now, at the end of the day, we can still make that product cheaper in China. So we got a deal in China where we're not going to pay someone $20 an hour down from $30. We're going to pay them $2 a day. So we got a deal with China. So we're going to go to China. We're going to have China build us a factory. They're going to become a part owner. But we're going to have a product that we're going to manufacture there. We're going to manufacture a television set, a computer, a washing machine. And we're going to bicycle them. We're going to bring it back and sell it at Walmart for $100, where before it would have cost us $100. Look how rich we are. And suddenly the greed in America, the consumers, says, I want to invest in that. The hedge funds made their money. The equity partnerships made their money. Everybody made their money, and even the greedy pensions made their money by investing in apartheid regime products in South Africa, in Iranian oil. It was terrible, the lack of ethics of how people made money. But as long as you can make money, you made money. It was all a bubble. It was all an illusion. Americans were broke. Americans were living on debt, the credit card debt. The equity in their house was a bubble, equity. Therefore, it was an illusionary bubble. Commercial real estate, a bubble. But borrowing against your commercial real estate to buy five more buildings. having your casino build four more casinos, having your jetliner build four more jetliners because you got cheap money, and today you get money for zero. So our entire economy is an illusion.
Yes.
Your thoughts, please.
Yes. So what has to be done then is also pretty obvious. As I said, catastrophes will take care of this very unstable situation. We have seen certain inequities in other countries like Egypt and Tunisia right now getting headlines all over the world because people had enough. Now, in America, the situation is somewhat different because we have here artificially, as you...
We haven't got enough yet. We're not in enough pain, as bad as that is.
That is part of it, but part of it also this artificial division between two political parties. And people think that by being Democrat, they're making a noise, or by being Republican, they're making a noise.
Or the Tea Party's, you're going to be pulled up by the Republicans. A big lie there. They've been used.
Yeah. So that unfortunate vision that people have, another illusion that they're actually choosing between two parties, whereas there really isn't much choice because both parties are united in one thing and one thing only, which is they're materialist and they're cynic. One party talks about gives lip service to God and therefore Christian movement,
the Republicans,
what have
conservatives,
they support that. They get that, and the other party are openly atheistic and so-called...
Agnostic.
Agnostic, or whatever you want to call them.
Existential dissidents.
But the existential is a very good word for them, because in existentialism, there is only pretension. There is no real values. Mm-hmm. So everybody pretends. Everybody is ultimately Republican, Democrat, Tea Party. Everybody is ultimately existentialist. No values, only pretension. So how will it change? It is changing already because this is very unstable. In economics, it has become so unstable that these forever recessions are going to get into more deeper and deeper recessions. We haven't seen nothing yet. Actually,
I agree.
This time we avoided because there was still some credibility for the United States left. But suppose another recession, which is not very far away, just a few years away, because there is not easily created bubble to be had. Of course, people will figure out some bubbles, I'm sure. But those bubbles are going to be shorter and shorter lived. And then what do you do? Next time this cure that they found is not going to work, right?
There's three things that we have not taken into consideration. Chaos. The climate change due to global warming is creating the worst winters, the worst droughts, the worst rainfall, and hailstorms. And that is warming up the Atlantic. This year, 21 degrees up and warmer for this time than any other time, which meant massive melt-off of permafrost, massive melt-off of the Arctic, which meant changing the current, which meant more precipitate matter, which meant more snow and more rain. It's amazing that the Republicans can't seem to figure this out. Now, so we are now going to have more catastrophic problems. That means food crops are going to be destroyed, either because of drought on one end or flooding on the other. Their answer is genetic engineering. Today there is a demonstration. This is my last question for you. Today there's a demonstration as part of this. We are protesting today against the alignment of Bill Gates in the American media and the American government and all the celebrities who are surrounding, like Bono. They're calling for, you know, genetic engineering is the answer to starvation. It is not. It is a cause of starvation. They're calling for mass immunization programs. And we're saying, Mr. Gates, you have not looked at all the evidence. So there's protests right now against Chairman Gates at Microsoft headquarters in New York City. It's going on as we speak right now. Vaccine advocates, not the advocating for vaccines, but those who have found the science behind vaccines, safety and efficacy lacking, are there to say you have been treated with differential and preferential handling by all the media. If Bill Gates shows up, they all just get down and genuflect.
Sounded
instead
right.
Of honest, objective questioning of him about show us the science, who have you gotten your information from? And if he was honest, he would have to say, from vaccine scientists who are on the payroll of vaccine companies and therefore extremely biased. He is not a scientist, and he won't listen to those who are scientists and journalists who have seen the truth. He is not open to any of this. We've sent him emails, letters, documentaries, articles, all politely, so I might mention, never without any attack towards him, and say, please examine this. He refuses to. This is the paradigm. Those who control the paradigm, those who are the elite intellectuals, elite business, elite politicians, elite journalists, elite entertainers, refuse to look at the truth outside of their own limited paradigm. Now, in your concept of your quantum activism, how can we in the United States learn the lesson of challenging virtually all of our institutions because they've all betrayed us? Our religious institutions, our political institutions, our social institutions, our educational institutions, our entertainment institutions, all institutions, our scientific institutions, our medical institutions have all betrayed the truth because they are all commodified, yes, commercialized,
corrupted,
and dominated, yes, by corruption at all levels. How do you use quantum activism towards these?
Well, quantum activism is fundamentally a process. We start with right thinking. The thinking is, basic thinking is wrong. Basic thinking is that everything is matter, there is no value, there is no meaning. It's all existentialism, pretend values, pretend meaning, and be as cynical as you want to be, and center on your pleasure.
When you're saying everything is matter, you're saying everything's a physical possession, a car, a house, a dress, a diamond, a yacht.
Because they satisfy our pleasure centers. There are these built-in negative emotional brain circuit, which is not always experienced as negative, like pleasure. Too much of it becomes negative. So we call them negative emotion also, ultimately, because as you know, too much pleasure, nobody can sustain. It becomes pain. But this identification of happiness with material happiness that you mentioned earlier in the broadcast, that identification goes a long way to close people's mind because they only think of short term. And of course, these systems that have been created are very powerful because, for example, that need can be marketed. People's need is not their inherent need, but a need that a company can create by just marketing. These kind of ideas have been very useful for propagating this kind of philosophy, because no longer people are even capable of looking at their real needs. Their real needs are, of course, meaning, values, all these things that we are talking about. However, the saving grace is that this is an unstable system. This is not a sustainable system. Therefore, the system is already showing signs of cracking up, showing signs of
shedding its strengths.
That's right, shedding its strength. Good way of putting it. What will come in its place? Right thinking. The more quickly we can think right, a substantial number of us. This is another part of the new paradigm, which is beautiful, Gary, which is that if a few million of us can think the new way and live the new way, then we can change the whole world. We don't have to wait for the 6 billion people to do right thinking.
I agree, and I believe that we're going to see that in the next 3 years, the shift occurring. Why? Because I believe real estate's going to go from 15 to 50% drop in its value across the country starting now over the next 24 months. I believe that none of the jobs that we have lost in the manufacturing sector as a percentage is coming back. These have all gone off and are going off daily to China, India, and other places. And that's going to increase. I also believe that when you are only a service and a consumer society, when you're consuming based upon what? Accumulation of debt. Hence, we're not going to be able to accumulate debt. Therefore, we can't consume. When we can't consume, and there are 5.5 million vacant homes right now in the United States. I just came from New Orleans, where there were 29% of all homes in all of New Orleans, all the parishes, vacant. But in the Ninth Ward, it's 95% vacant. I believe that you're going to see gigantic vacancies. If they started bringing these vacant homes back on the market now, the value of what's there now would collapse and go down 80%.
Of course.
90% of all people's value that they have at all today is the equity in their home. Right now, 68% of all homes are underwater. That means that the entire middle class economy is bankrupt. Our federal economy is bankrupt because they refuse to get rid of the subsidies to the military industrial complex, to the energy cartels, to the food production segments. They haven't to the health care, to the insurance industry, the pharmaceutical industries. They could cut $2 trillion, and they're not cutting a nickel from these places.
Right.
Instead, they want to take away people's Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, or they say the unions or what we're paying people are too much. Wrong. We're not paying people enough. They've got Glenn Beck. You've got it wrong. Sean Hannity, you've got it wrong. You should be paying people more. If you pay them more and you give people a living wage, then they have money to pay off their debt, pay off their mortgages, and put money back into the economy. You're not. You're doing absolutely the. My God, how many people we have are so blind. To the conservatives and to the middle, to the Clinton and Obama Democrats, who are no different than Ronald Reagan in drag. All right, that's what you are. You are treating the economy and the middle class like Benjamin Rush treated George Washington. He bled him to death from a common cold. All right? You're doing the exact wrong thing. You should be infusing money into small businesses. With if you hire a person, you hire them at $30 an hour. If we give you $1 million, at zero interest loan for 3 years. You don't have to pay it back for 3 years at zero interest. You would have 5 million businesses. You would put every unemployed American back to work at a living wage. We would suddenly become a nation of builders. Instead, we are a nation of consumers on debt, and they're taking away the final pennies of people who are now working two jobs, mothers who can't be with their kids because they can't afford not to work, and what they make, they are still living at subsistence level. That's
like
the stupidity of the people.
Even ideas like research and innovation, which almost everybody wants to support. Look at that. Look at the research and innovation that is actually being done. It's always in the same old, tired ideas.
You can't get a penny if you are innovative in science.
Exactly.
National Institute of Health,
exactly.
National Cancer Institute, American Cancer Society, these people are Tyrannosaurus Rexes.
Alternative medicine can solve the problem of healthcare cost in just a matter of 10 years.
That's
if it becomes acceptable, if we recognize, like you said, that really there is no room for materialistic medicine except for emergency room procedures. If that is understood, the medical cost will disappear, evaporate overnight practically.
Take the profit out of medicine and you take the disease out of our bodies. I'm Gary Noll, my guest, professor, emeritus professor of theoretical nuclear physics at the University of Oregon's Institute of Theoretical Physics, a great author and a conversation of a remarkable mind, Professor Amit Goswami, G-O-S-W-A-M-I, author of Self-Aware Universe. Final comments before we go to a commentary from Chris Hedges on the subject of the Huffington Post. Suya Farber.
Yeah, these are fascinating big themes. I was sitting here thinking about your term spiritual journalism, and those are two words that have never gone together. And it's you know, I've been in journalism for 24 years, and I would say that the disease of journalism, and we're living now to see the disease manifest as, journalism, I would say mainstream journalism is near death. The only reason it appears to be sustained and alive is because of corporate sponsorship, primarily by the pharmaceutical industry. I hope I haven't simplified that too much. I haven't done all the research on it. But when I watch television, I listen to the radio, and I look at magazines, it appears to me that the primary force, economic forces, holding our media under the arms today is the pharmaceutical industry. Would you agree with me so far?
Absolutely.
Okay. This has obviously shaped their thinking, and what they did was they took a a Faustian deal. And whether they were conscious, whether they realized they were doing it, they betrayed their public, they betrayed the audience. They started to manifest the ideas, which are actually quite violent, of the pharmaceutical industry. And I was watching yesterday on YouTube the interview that Anderson Cooper did with Dr. Andrew Wakefield.
It was despicable.
Absolutely despicable. I called my son over. I said, I want you to just watch this. And he was just staggered. He said, I don't understand. He said, Mom, he wouldn't let him answer. For example, Anderson Cooper charged Dr. Wakefield with, you know, fraud, outright fraud. You're a liar. And the BMJ said, you're a fraud and a liar. And why would Brian Deere do this? Claiming that Brian Deere, the journalist who's been persecuting Dr. Andrew Wakefield, has no financial vested interest. And this comes up a lot, you know, that such and such for... The guy's been working on this for, what, 6 years, eight
yes.
years? So makes no... Nobody's paying him. So Andrew Wakefield says, well, he was actually given financial support by, was it the Pharmaceutical Manufacturers
Association?
Yeah,
it's a trade group representing
yeah.
the people who made the MMR vaccine that was at the heart of this entire controversy.
Right. And in that moment, now that is an aha moment. That is a bombshell, he said it categorically. And to me, it seemed like Anderson Cooper embodied the death of journalism in that moment. Because instead of saying, stop, wait, right, what did you just say? Are you serious? Can you prove that? We're going to do a program on that tomorrow. Will you come back? Uh-uh. He just rolled right over as if he was talking about something completely irrelevant. Just swatted it away and said, well, anyway, let's move on. Da-da-da. Point being, there's the good news and bad news, the good news and the good news. The good news is that journalism, media, mass media, has become so conformist, so terrified, as you say, of really what they're terrified of, in my experience, is being thought to be different. Because there are strong, bullying, fascist elements running all through media. And I've lived it. And I know it's true that if you step out of line and you are seen to be strange or weird or unorthodox or, you know, tinfoil hat and all this, they are on you, and it's knives and broken bottles, and not a lot of people can survive that contempt. So you got to be prepared for that, that if you want to be an individual thinker and you want to push the truth and you want to do your story, it's going to be really ugly. But then you're going to come through it. And you're going to have a lot of fun, and you're going to meet fascinating people.
But keep in mind, there was a time when we didn't have a place that we could work from with like-minded people and an audience that could appreciate the messages that we were sharing. Now on the Progressive Radio Network, we do. And we're not a few, or a few thousand, or a few hundred thousand, or a few million. We're a lot of people. And so therefore, these people, they want to come and debate, we always offer them a forum. See how long they stay credible if they come up and debate those who are here to support progressive ideas. Celia Farber, thank you very much.
Thank you,
and
Gary.
And Celia is going to be doing a program on investigative journalism for investigative journalists here on the Progressive Radio Network. In a moment, after this music, a commentary on the Huffington Post. Please stay with us. Who's going to cover the truth? How about no one in the mainstream media? So the internet is our source. And so the truth will get out. But why do I say all this? Because many of you have used the Huffington Post as your primary source or one of your major sources for getting progressive information from progressive authors. My problem, I've never considered Arianna Huffington a progressive. I've considered her a very rigid ideologue, first on the right, then on the left. I have not considered most of the articles in there to have been cutting edge or challenging or really in-depth reporting. So, little surprise when it was sold. What's now going to happen? Well, what's going to happen, I believe, is you're not going to see those critical articles that could have been at home as a forum. Here's what Chris Hedges has to say. I'm quoting now from TruthDig.com, Huffington Plunders. Quote, I was in New York City on Thursday night at the Breck Forum to discuss with the photographer Eugene Richards his powerful new book, War is Personal, when I was approached by an interview by a blogger from the Huffington Post. I just finished speaking with another blogger who had recently graduated from the University of California, Berkeley. These encounters, which are frequent at public events, break my heart. I see myself in the older bloggers, many of whom worked for newspapers until they took buyouts or were laid off, as well as in the aspiring reporters. These men and women love the trade. They want to make a difference. They have the integrity not to sell themselves to public relations firms or corporate-funded propaganda outlets, and they keep at it the way true artists, musicians, and actors do. Although there are dimmer and dimmer hopes of compensation. They are victims of a dying culture, one that no longer values the talents that would keep it healthy and humane. The corporate state remunerates corporate management and public relations. It lavishes money on the celebrities who provide the fodder for our national mini-dramas. But those who deal with the bedrock virtues of truth and justice and beauty, who seek not to entertain but to transform, are discarded. They must struggle on their own. The sale of the Huffington Post to AOL for $315 million and the tidy profit of reportedly at least several million dollars made by principal owner and founder Arianna Huffington, who was already rich, is emblematic of this new paradigm of American journalism. The Huffington Post, as Stephen Colbert pointed out when he stole the entire content of the Huffington Post and rechristened it the Colbuffington Repost, produces itself. The highly successful site, like most internet sites, is largely pirated from other sources, especially traditional news organizations, or is the product of unpaid writers who are rechristened citizen journalists. It is driven by the celebrity gossip that dominates cheap tabloids, with one or two stories that come from the New York Times or one of the wire services to give it a veneer of journalistic integrity. Hollywood celebrities, or at least their publicists, write windy and vapid commentaries. And this, I fear, is what news is going to look like in the future. The daily reporting and monitoring of city halls and courts and neighborhoods and government, along with investigations into corporate fraud and abuse, will be replaced by sensational garbage. And the web packages that and makes it look like news but contains little real news. The terminal decline of newspapers has destroyed thousands of jobs that once were dedicated to reporting and verifying fact and giving a voice to those without these new news organizations. Newspapers, although they were too embedded among the power elite and blunted their effectiveness in the name of faux objectivity, at least stopped things from getting worse. This last and imperfect bulwark has been removed. It has been replaced by internet creations that mimic journalism. Good reporters, like good copy editors or good photographers, who must be paid and trained for years while they learn their trade, are becoming as rare as blacksmiths. Stories on popular sites are judged not by the traditional standards of journalism, but by how many hits they receive, how much internet traffic they generate, how much advertising they can attract. News is irrelevant. Facts means little. Reporting is largely non-existent. No one seems to have heard of the common good. Our television screens are filled with these new chattering celebrity journalists. They pop up one day as government spokespersons and appear the next as hosts on morning news shows. They deal the currency of emotion, not truth. They speak in empty cliches, not ideas. They hyperventilate with a spin from the left to the right over every bit of gossip, and their corporate sponsors make these court jesters millionaires. We are entertained by these clowns as corporate predators ruthlessly strip us of our capacity to sustain a living, kill our ecosystem because of greed, gut civil liberties, and turn us into serfs. Any business owner who uses largely unpaid labor with a handful of underpaid non-union employees to build a company that is sold for a few hundred million dollars, no matter how he or she is introduced to you on the television screen, is not a liberal. It is not a progressive. Those who take advantage of workers, whatever their outward ideological veneer, to make profits of that magnitude are charter members of the exploitive class. Dust off your Karl Marx. They are the enemies of working men and women, and they are also, in this case, sucking the life blood out of a trade I care deeply about. It was bad enough that Huffington used her site for flagrant self-promotion, although the cult of the self has reached such dizzying proportions in American society that such behavior is almost expected. But there's an even sadder irony that this was carried out in the name of journalism. This latest form of liberal exploitation exposes yet another, again, in the liberal class for who they really are. Opportunists whose operating methods are as callous as those employed in the textile mills in southern China. Is it any wonder that working men and women who have been abandoned and betrayed by these self-identified liberals hate the liberal class and its transparent hypocrisy? Is it any wonder that some 40 million Americans who live in poverty are invisible to the wider culture? Is it any wonder that the Tea Party and all the lunatics on the fringe of our political spectrum put their crosshairs on the liberal class and its purported values? Let us not forget the title of Huffington's latest book, The Third World America: How Our Politicians Are Abandoning the Middle Class and Betraying the American Dream. Liberals like those deserve the rage they engender. The argument made to defend this exploitation is that the writers had a choice. It is an argument I also heard made by the managers of sweatshops in the Dominican Republic and Mexico, the coal companies in West Virginia or Kentucky, the huge poultry farms in Maine. It is the argument made by the comfortable, by those who do not know what it is to be hard up, desperate, or driven by a passion to express oneself in the world through journalism or art. It is the argument the wealthy elite, who have cemented in place an oligarchical system under which there are no real choices, use to justify their oppression. In conclusion, who would not want to be able to carry out his or her trade and make enough to pay the bills? What worker would decide that they should decline the possibility of job protection, health care, and pension? Why do these people think tens of millions of Americans endure substandard unemployment? If Huffington has a conscience, she will sit down when AOL delivers the check and make sure every cent of it is paid out to those who work free or at minimal wages for her over the last 6 years, starting with Mayhill Fowler, the blogger who broke the clinging to guns and religion story about Barack Obama during the 2008 presidential campaign and spent 2 years writing and reporting without salary. Quote, she strung me along for 2 years while I repeatedly asked for funding for the three projects, and then I quit, unquote. Fowler told me from Oakland, California, as I spoke with her by phone. when Fowler, whom the site nominated twice for a Pulitzer Prize, finally resigned last year in disgust, Mario Ruse, the spokesperson for the Huffington Post, acidly told Yahoo, quote, Mayhill Fowler says that she is resigning from the Huffington Post. How do you resign from a job you never had? Unquote. That comment says it all. It exposes the callousness of our oligarchical class and their belief that they have a right to use anyone who can contribute to the moments they spend their lives erecting to themselves. End quote. Chris Hedges.
Have a nice day, everyone.